So how is your mirror? I think someone may have crawled into our house last night, hon. Some old man, because when I looked in the mirror, this old man stared back at me, and I'm sure, I don't know how he got there. So how is your mirror? The true light, we are to reflect. And if our mirror gets dusty or tarnished, we can't reflect Jesus as we should. There is a verse that says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. It's not our lights. We are just reflectors. So how is your mirror? We're going to take a look at some light. Let's see if we can get an exclamation mark to show up there, Cristiano. And basically what we're going to do is look at characteristics of light from early times. Thank you. And if we could get some lights out, lights out so we can study the light. Make it as dark as we can so we can study the light. We'll be starting with Isaac Newton, who when he was born, he was a preemie. He could fit into a quart jar. And the bishop of the church who wanted to help Mary Newton said, you should put a hot water bottle in there with that little tiny thing. He might live. And he did. And he shed a lot of light, knowledge about light itself. Yeah, we need to get it a little darker yet. There's still some lights. If you can get it darker, it'll be great. So we're going to take a look at the God of light. Somehow that just really doesn't come through. I am the light of the world. Jesus is. Our God, dwelling in the light, which no man can approach, unto whom no man hath seen nor can see. And at the end of our time together, there's a promise that we will be able to see him. There is that promise coming. God is light. He's also love. But John, the one we read in the book of John about the light, and here in 1 John, he's still on the same topic. God is light. And there circled, I don't know if it shows up very well, supposed to be an artist's representation of Jesus, the real light. The city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof, and he should be the light of each one of us. Why study the characteristics of light anyway? Because they let us understand and comprehend the majesty, power, the mystery that is God as much as we can understand and as much as is revealed. Some things are not revealed. If we could fully understand God, some have said he would not be God if we fully understood him. So we're going to take a look at what these wise scientists said, beginning with Isaac. So we're going to look at the progress of our knowledge of what composes light from the 1600s clear up to the 20th century. See what these wise scientists think they knew about light. 1670, Isaac. He took a prism and was able to take white light, sunlight, white light, and break it up into a spectrum. Some of you might call it a rainbow, but even when there's no rain around, you can still see a spectrum. And we're going to take a look at it in a different way. We're going to use what is called a diffraction grating because it produces a brighter light than even a prism can. So we'll see if our old overhead projector can work here. I'm just going to hold up the diffraction gratings here. You might see a little color in there, but there's no color on its own. And we'll let the light from this overhead projector come up through this material, which is really inscribed with lots of very fine lines, and it will diffract the light and make a spectrum, not a rainbow. There's not a drop of rain in here. Hello. And we'll just mask that off a little bit because it isn't real clear yet. And so what we'll do is block off right and left of this on the screen so that there's just a narrow slit. And maybe move that over this way so that at least on to your right side, You can see the spectrum, Roy G. Biv, that shows up fairly clearly now, I think. Let's see if I can get that one covered up again. So that's a fairly bright spectrum. Isaac was able to show that white light contained all these colors, all the colors. And he also took a reverse situation where we took all those colors and blended them back together, and it made white again. So if you have all the colors present, they can make white. And we're going to put certain filters in front of the projector's light and see what they block out. We would call this, if you could see it, I don't know if you can see it very well, it's kind of a green filter. Well, you can see it when we put it right down here. You can see it across the white band. And you can see what it blocks out. It blocks out, absorbs the red part of the spectrum and most of the blue. That's called primary green filter. Here's a red one. You can see in the center. And it pretty well wipes out the green and the blue and only lets the red show. Oh, this is yellow. Gotta cover that up again there. And the yellow is interesting. It basically only absorbs blue and lets green and red come through. Keep that in mind, that yellow lets green and red come through. You're going to need it in just a moment. There will be a test later. Oh, magenta. Any of you have an inkjet printer hooked up to your computer? When you go buy the cartridges, you'll buy the black that prints all the pages. But then you should have a magenta, a cyan, and a yellow ink that you have to buy. Well, this is the magenta. And look what it lets through. It should be letting through the blue and the red and pretty well blocking out the green. So it eats green for breakfast, this magenta does. It doesn't let it shine through. And then we have, I think this is the cyan, what you'd call cyan. And it should let these two through and pretty well block out the red. Now, if we take this thing away, a lot of us are familiar from grade school. When I went to school, they taught me that the primary colors were red, yellow, and blue. Anybody else learn it that way? Yeah. Actually, it should have been magenta, yellow, and cyan. Those are the primary pigments. The true primary colors, the lights that you shine, are not those three. They're red, green, and blue. So we're going to take some of these that we learned about just a while before. What was this one called? Magenta, good. You're good students. And it eats green for breakfast, remember? So there's no green left from that one. And yellow, what did it absorb? Blue. So if you knock the blue and the green out of the spectrum, what's left? Red. Remember those red, green, and blue? So if you overlap these two, you get the primary red. And then here we have, I think that was the cyan. Remember what it knocked out? Blocked out the red. And so if that's red and this blocks out the red, then where it crosses, it should leave nothing. Should be pretty black. Where these two overlap, we have the green that's left between those two, and we have the primary blue which is left from those two. This is color subtraction, and a lot of us are familiar with color subtraction. If you mix tempera paints or crayons, that's color subtraction. But how many of us are familiar with color addition? Some of us are not very familiar with color addition. This is all absorbing certain wavelengths of light, and they disappear when they're absorbed. So we're going to take a little different tack and try some addition of color, projecting actual wavelengths of light onto a white screen. Antonietta and others, let's see, I guess Michelle also helped us find the scissors to make the hole bigger. Got to find the right filter here. I'd like to get the green one. I can hardly see in the dark up here. Is that the green one? Yeah, pretty much green. And I'll step down to this slide projector. And we're going to project some red. Now, this is adding light. A lot of us are not familiar very much with the addition of light. Let me see where this is going. Good. Okay. So I'm going to tape this one up here. So I have red. What happens if you mix red crayons and green crayons on a white paper? Looks yuck, right? Brownish, ugly. But now we're going to add two lights together. Actually adding two colors together. Are you ready for this? What do you think it'll make if you add red and green? Does it look yellow? The intensities might not be just perfect, but red and green actually make yellow. And if we had a primary blue to project on top of it, you could make white right in the middle where the three circles would overlap. So red, green, and blue are the three colors of the pixels on your computer screen that add up to make white. Anytime there needs to be white on the screen, it's the red, green, and blue that makes that. And why study all this? Because of all these little fun things will help us get a little better picture of some of the characteristics of God as we go through. So while that was perhaps interesting and not something you normally see in church, our focus is still upon what can it really tell us about our Father. And we're going to go on and take a look. So Isaac Newton did that much for us. Well, maybe he didn't do all the intricacies of red, green, and blue, and cyan, and magenta, and yellow. But we'll go on and see what he did do here. Pause for demo. We just did that. Isaac Newton concluded, and realized, when we see light, we can't see the individual particles, the photons of the light. We don't really know from casual human experience what light is composed of. So this brilliant mind thought that light was composed of particles, and the reason he did was because of the sharp shadows that light can make. If all these particles of light are coming toward objects and there's something in the way, it would block those particles, and what's left of the particles could show up as bright areas, and then you'd have the shadows. So he concluded that light was composed of particles. Fairly logical. Christian Huygens in 1680 says, nah, I don't think so. See, these guys can't agree. We're going to go on through the history of light. Light is not a particle. Light is a wave. Christian Huygens, 1680. And if it's a wave, it should exhibit constructive and destructive interference, where actually light plus light can equal darkness. If they're out of step and out of phase perfectly, they can cancel out and make blackness. That just is wrong. And if they're together in step, they will actually make constructive interference, which makes it brighter than it was before. The two beams combine to make it brighter. Constructive interference. And he envisioned light as a longitudinal wave-like sound. And we'll demo that. My wife can come up and help me do that here, and you can make your way up as I show a longitudinal wave, sometimes called a compressional wave, because there are little compressions that bounce along. There's one more visual, and then we'll show that, Barb. You can just sit down. Here's a speaker. I think we've got speakers going on in here. Have any of you looked at a good big speaker that has a big bass woofer down there and see it pump the sound out? You've seen that? And it's pumping this way? That's the compressions that bang on the molecules, and those compressions travel along like this until they reach your eardrum. And then they vibrate the eardrum and the cochlea and all those little nerves in there that interpret it as sound, and you can hear my voice unless you're deaf. So that's a compressional wave, and we'll try to demonstrate that now, Barbie. Now you can turn some lights on just briefly for this table, because we're going to stretch this little slinky out on the table and try to just show you what that really looks like if this slinky will hold together. Okay, so I'm going to send the compression toward Barb. Does that show up at all? And if I were able to pump it back and forth at, say, 60 times a second, 60 hertz, you might even be able to hear it, but I can send a series of pulses down there. So that is a longitudinal wave, a compressional wave, like sound. And Christian Huygens said, I think that's what light is. Thank you, Barb. You can take my toy away? Oh, you can have it. We'll just set it here for safekeeping. I tried to find the good metal ones. At the dollar store, all they had was these little cheap plastic ones. The other day, let's see, what did I do with my clicker? Anybody see where I put it? Oh, it's sitting on the computer. Thank you. Okay. Thomas Young, 1807, a little later. He did what was called the double slit experiment. And you can see that there's an upper screen there. This is looking down from above, so the light is, the sunlight is coming down toward this upper screen that has one slit in it. And light diffracts, that is, it'll spread out into a shadow region. And you can see these little circles of red and yellow and red and yellow. And you can think of those as being crests and troughs. Like the red is a crest and the yellow part is a trough. So that light coming around there then hits a second screen that has the two slits in it. Can you see the two slits where they are? One right there, one right there. And as light exits from these two slits, it does the same thing that it did from the first slit. It starts to diffract and make these circular wavefronts. So here they come, the two crests, two troughs. You see where the two troughs overlap right there where the yellows come together? Those will be in phase because they're both the same kind of stuff. They're the same kind of depression or a rarefaction if it's a longitudinal wave, whatever it is. So you have all these things where there are lines of waves that are in step, like where you see the two red circles, all the red semicircles overlapping and coinciding right at one along this line and then down the middle and then one over to the right side. And there's lines of waves that are out of step where there's a crest and a trough meeting each other, and they're going to cancel. So the lines of waves in step are here and here and here. And then where they cancel out of step, here and here. And so Thomas Young was very ingenious because then he put a screen down below here to let this result shine on a final screen that didn't have slits in it. It was just a white screen. And you could see bright and dark bands because of where the light added up or where it canceled out. So it looks something like this. I don't know if the dark shows up very well, but all the B-labeled ones are dark and the A ones are bright. And he said if light is really a wave, it'll exhibit this kind of interference, constructive and destructive. This is not light. I think this was a photograph from a wave tank where they did water waves with two sources of water waves where they would overlap and cancel kind of in a V there. They're canceled out. And the others are very prominent and showing up. Poisson and Arago in 1807 actually showed another way that interference could occur. And that isn't a very good depth there, but you can see a laser on a tripod and then there's a white screen and someone tried to take a picture of that interference pattern there that's in the inset down here. I took a steel ball bearing. Well, it just isn't very bright. And mounted it on the top of a little piece of a nail with a magnet underneath it. So the steel ball bearing could stay right on top like a golf ball on a tee. And then shone a laser light down toward the golf ball, or toward the steel ball bearing. And it looked like there was a hole right down the center of the steel ball bearing. And maybe you can comprehend how that might be if, hold your hand up this way and in a tight fist. Here's the ball bearing, here's the stand. So as the light came around the ball bearing and diffracted, it came together right behind it from all directions. And right behind it then, it's all in phase. That's why there's a central bright spot. Hold your hand up again. And then as light would come this way, if you go off to the side just a little bit, the light that went further around here could be a half a wavelength out of step with this one at various places. And that's where you get a dark fringe. So where the light's in phase, you get the bright fringes, and where it's dark, it's canceling. Light plus light equals darkness. Any idea what that is? I did that one with another laser, or with the same laser, but a different setup. That's not a ball bearing this time. All we old men that used to use these things? Razor blade, yeah. That's an old double-edged razor blade. And it makes a very interesting pattern of light fringe. I don't know how it does that out to the sides and some right down the middle. There are holes down the middle of a old double-edged razor blade. So that's some more light diffraction around a common object. And if you hold one of your CDs in the light, it might show some interference where certain wavelengths are knocked out and you get these pretty colors. Then there was Fresnel in 1833. He says, yeah, light's a wave. I agree. But it's not longitudinal like sound. I think it's transverse. A wave that looks more like this, with crests and troughs. Instead of the compressions you saw on the table a while ago, he says, yeah, light's a transverse wave. So we're going to take a look and demonstrate some of that. That's what a transverse wave might be diagrammed like. And we're going to talk about some polarizers. So let's pause, get Megan up here, and Sean. Megan agreed ahead of time to help me, so she better not back out now. Where are you, Sean? This is not a clothes rack. Okay, Sean, let's see. You can take the end with the loop, and you're going to hold that like so. No, she is. And you're going to take the, okay, you're going to go there closer to the piano. I'm going to stretch this out. Come this way a little bit, Megan. No, okay. Okay, so I can send a wave right through those slits, no problem. So if this was a light wave, it could pass through that way. Now send your filter there perpendicular to where you had it before, Megan, and I'll try to do the same thing. And it just doesn't want to go through very well, does it? And if we had one more Megan, if she was cloned and we had another identical twin to her with an identical piece of apparatus with another one, the first one could be called the polarizer, and the second one is an analyzer. So that if there was all kinds of random light coming toward the first one, the only kind of transverse wave that could get through was the one that vibrated parallel to the slits, and the other one could block it. That would be called the analyzer. The first one's the polarizer. Thanks, guys. We can just set them down. We'll pick them up later. So that will help make more sense out of this diagram, I hope. That light that's vibrating in all kinds of directions, if it is transverse wave, light vibrating from all kinds of directions on your left there, as it hits the first polarizer, it only lets through, as you saw with the rope, only those waves that are vibrating parallel to the slots in whatever medium. And it actually turns out that polarizing media is a bunch of molecules light up in such a way that it absorbs all the waves except the ones that are going in a certain direction. And we're going to demonstrate that with the overhead projector in a minute. So now the first piece of polarizing film has knocked out, absorbed all those that are vibrating in random directions and only lets through the ones that are going through vertically. And then if you have another same kind of film that you've turned at 90 degrees, it can't go at all. Therefore, if light can be polarized, wouldn't that be good evidence that it's a transverse wave? If it can be polarized. Let's take a look. Whoa, I didn't want to. Okay, pause for demo. Fine, I'll hit the B key, which means black. So we'll go up here with some of these polarizing films. And I went to Walgreens the other day to buy these things. I've never heard of them. They're called snow caps. But I wanted them because of the cellophane wrapper. So I don't know if these are any good to eat or not. Some of you heard of them? Anybody heard of snow caps? I don't know. It says yummy semi-sweet chocolate non-perils with these little white sprinkles on them. So here's our overhead projector. And if you can imagine, down inside of here, there's a very bright light, an incandescent bulb that's sending off light in all kinds of random directions of vibration. So here's a polarizing film. And if it knocks out everything except those that vibrate in a certain direction, would the light get dimmer or brighter going through this? Dimmer, because all of those that are knocked out are, and according to the manufacturer, these molecules are lined up in such a way that the clear edges represent the direction of polarization. So it looks a little gray because a lot of the light is canceled out. Here is a second polarizer. So as the light comes up through the first one, if I place it parallel to the first one, the light should still be able to get through, huh? Maybe a little dimmer. And as we turn this second one, you can see that if you had a crossed clothes rack like we talked about a while ago, that you could just cancel the light out. So the guys that first discovered this said, this is unequivocal evidence that light is what kind of a wave? Transverse wave. But there's other scientists that muddy the water. You'll see that later. So this, to me, is a very good evidence that light is transverse. Now, where's our... We got to do our good stuff with this that I bought. I walked in and asked the clerk, I said, is there any old Luden's cough drops or anything with cellophane in it anymore? Do they even make it like that? So, well, we got these things. So here's this piece of cellophane. You can just crumple up. And the spiritual lesson is here that even when our lives seem crumpled and distorted and ready to throw in the garbage, if God shines His beautiful light upon us and does His thing with our lives, He can turn our lives into something beautiful. I've got to crumple it a little more because sometimes you get other patterns in there. Well, it's doing about what it did before. And if we have tried to patch up our lives with tape across our wounds, and we try to do it all on our own, and we do these random tapings to keep ourselves together, you can see the tape there. Then His light again can say, no, my child, you don't need to go taping up your life. Let me shine my light on you because my light is better, and it can take care of your sad things. Careful not to fall off of this stage here. Armand Fiziot, 1850. Light is a wave, he agreed, and it travels slower in water than in air, and that's why you see a pencil, if it's inserted halfway into a glass half full of water, it looks bent, like that. And you can calculate angles of incidence and refraction and determine the speed of light in these different substances. Diamond has one of the highest indices of refraction of a lot of things. There's ice and different kinds of plastics and glasses. Then Michael Faraday. He studied electricity and magnetism greatly in 1830. He postulated the existence of magnetic and electric fields, which has something to do with what we're headed to. And then there was another fellow, James Clerk Maxwell. Maxwell's equations used to be the bane of me when I took these E&M tests in college. He had some really far out equations. He said light is electromagnetic. And if it's an electromagnetic wave, it belongs to the EM spectrum. You see gamma rays over here on the left all the way up to the amplitude modulated AM waves, FM frequency modulated waves. And these values just underneath this stretched out diagram represent wavelengths in meters. So you see the one over there by FM? So FM waves are nearly, close to a meter long. There's various ones. And then short wave 10 squared, that's 100 meters long. And that short wave is way longer than TV waves. Then there's AM waves, 10 to the 4th. That's 10,000 meters for one up and down of a transverse wave. That's a long way. Then you come this way, ultraviolet, 10 to the minus 8th. X-rays, 10 to the minus 10th. X-rays clear up to 10 to the minus 12th. Gammas, really short, penetrating, powerful waves, 10 to the minus 14. That's like a decimal point with 13 zeros and a 1. That part of a meter, can't even imagine something that tiny. And tucked right in the middle, between ultraviolet and infrared, would be the visible spectrum. Visible light. With the short wavelengths being in the violet end and the long ones over there in the red. And Sean and this other wonderful pianist we had up here, this guy. What's that? Clayton. He did such a beautiful job playing for People Need the Lord for Latarsha. And that was such a beautiful song. That's an old song, goes back a long time ago. And I'm glad that she was not intimidated for bringing such an old song back to us, because it's a powerful message, beautiful message, and you did such a great job with it. Well, what I was headed to say here, those of you musicians, we can hear about 9.5 octaves of sound if we're young and good of hearing. I probably lost a bunch of the high end, but I think I can still probably hear about 7 octaves. Light, we can only see about 1 octave of light. 1 octave only is all we can see if you apply the same criteria. I wonder what we'll be able to see in the new earth if our eyes are opened and we can see more of the spectrum. We would see colors that we have no words to describe because we haven't seen them before. We would have no knowledge. What if we go around seeing X-rays? I don't know if the Lord will let us see beyond what we see here on this earth. So we can see about 1 octave of light, and that's about it. James Clerk Maxwell says light is not a mechanical wave. Mechanical waves are like what Barb and I demonstrated with the little slinky and what Sean and I and Megan demonstrated with the rope. Water waves are mechanical. They have material that moves. So light is not a mechanical wave. And he's really talking about the electromagnetic waves, all of them. Don't require any medium. They can come across empty space from the sun and warm us up. Light can. Infrared can too. Doesn't need a medium in which to travel. Not a mechanical wave. Sound, though, needs a medium to travel in. And there's an old rumor going around that if you put your ear down on a railroad track and you can hear the train coming from a long ways away, lady, you better get out of the way. Albert Einstein, 1905, The Special Theory of Relativity. Permit me to shed some light on the subject. He came up with the idea that the speed of light is constant. Now, if you think of riding in a convertible, say I'm coming 60 miles an hour towards you, and I throw a golf ball at you at 20 miles an hour out of the car, it would hit you at about 80 miles an hour, because the car's velocity gets added to the golf ball. Not so with light. He showed that even if you shine a flashlight out of a car going half the speed of light towards you, you shine a flashlight toward you, if you detect the speed of the light coming at you, it's not 1.5 times the speed of light. It's just speed of light. Doesn't matter what relative motion you go through, light speed is a constant in empty space. Of course, if it goes through glass or water, it slows down some. One of the true constants of the universe, there it is, to quite a few number of significant digits. We'll round those off. About 300 million meters, 300 million of these in a second, or about 186,000 miles in a second. Pretty fast stuff. When Galileo tried to find the speed of light, he had Simplicio, his accomplice, on one tower in Rome, and he was over on another one, and he said, what I'm going to do is open my lantern, and when you see it open, you open yours so I'll know that you received it, and we'll try to time the time it takes to get back and forth. They tried this dozens of times, and Galileo said, either the speed of light is infinite, or it is so fast that our reaction time completely blurs the experiment. They couldn't find out how fast it really was. Albert Michelson, though, did later. This guy right here on the left, He did all kinds of experiments to find the speed of light. And he was successful, and he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics, the first one, for finding the speed of light with a rotating octagonal mirror. Max Planck and Niels Bohr also studied some things about light that we won't take time to take a look at. 1905, Albert Einstein comes back, and he says, light's not a wave. Now, this is supposed to be a really smart guy. It's not a wave. It's a particle. Make up your minds, guys. You're confusing me. Arthur Compton, Louis de Broglie, consider what they said. Watch this. Arthur, light is both a wave and a particle. And de Broglie, it's neither one. These guys could not agree on what light was, and so physics was in a quandary. The people that believed light was a wave were in one camp, and those that believed it was a particle in the other. They finally had a marriage, decided to put the two together, and called the thing a wavicle. Particle, wave, wavicle. A wavicle was supposed to be a little tiny bundle of wave that just had a very finite length. And in itself, it acted like a particle, but inside it, it had this wave character, which is why you were able to see polarized light do what it did. But Einstein was really right in one regard, because all of our solar panels, the photoelectric effect, depends upon light being a particle. If it was a wave, it wouldn't even work. I mean, if it's strictly a wave. So all of our solar energy, where photons are converted to electrons to give us power and electricity, has to depend upon light being a particle. So wavicles, we'll go with it. World's brightest minds can't really fully agree upon the nature of light. And now we turn to the devotional letter lessons, the spiritual lessons that we could get from this. So what do all these things really imply about our great God that so loved us that he gave his son to save us? He's the God of light. What do all these things tell us about God? Well, number one, all these various aspects that you've seen demonstrated, and there's many more, tons more than I could ever touch on in one service. If light had been very simply explained with just a few intricate phenomena, light wouldn't have been a very good approbation to describe our God from, because he is so infinitely complex beyond our comprehension. So it is something that even the greatest minds haven't been able to fully explain. That's a great symbol for our God. Canst thou by searching find out God? Canst thou find out the Almighty unto perfection? Job 11 verse 7. Who only hath immortality, dwelling in the light which no man can approach unto, whom no man hath seen nor can see? 1 Timothy 6. And then a question for you. Is darkness the absence of light, or is light the absence of darkness? Which one is true? Top or bottom? Jonathan says the bottom. Both? Well, light is a form of energy, and if there's no energy around at all, you would have darkness. So at least in my mind, darkness just means there's no light there. Maybe there's some of you that could argue the other side of it and explain that to me. But darkness being the absence of light, darkness is the absence of our God. He is light in whom is no darkness at all. This then is the message we have heard of him and declare to you, that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. Number three, since the speed is constant. And I've got a problem with that, because Einstein said the speed of light is the speed limit for the universe. Nothing can go faster than that. Do you believe that? When Daniel prayed, and Gabriel and other people prayed, they got pretty well instantaneous answers. So something's got to give there, brother Albert Einstein, and we'll figure out what that is in the new earth. But the speed being constant for all of our interactions says something about our God too. If that's a symbol of God, that says something about him. I'm the Lord, I change not. And there's some more to that. Here's a verse from Hebrews. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's constant. If he wasn't constant, if he was a whimsical God that we couldn't depend upon, he would not be God, and he would not be someone we could love and trust for being constant. And one more. Every good gift, every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. James wrote that one, and maybe there is one more. No, that's it. Okay. So it's a constant. He is a constant source of comfort and salvation for all of us. Just as light needs no medium in which to travel. That is true as far as we've studied as humankind. It doesn't have to have a medium. It's not a mechanical wave. God can reach us and be with us anywhere, anytime, any place. And if he can be with us, he can hear us too, without having to have a medium, someone to talk to confess our sins through. You know where I'm headed with that? I won't need to say anymore. We don't need a medium, an intermediary to approach God. We can go right to him without anything between. Light can illuminate the darkest passages. If it's dark, shine a little light in there. So turn that around back to the other question. If it was light, could you shine darkness in there and wipe out the light? That's why I think darkness is the absence of light. Just my little bias there. Then spake Jesus unto them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. It is life to us. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. And we could think of two examples of that, two applications. God's word, my Bible, wherever I left it up there on the pew, that word is a light to our path. But who was the word according to John? Jesus. He is the light unto our path too. And I think I allude to that here. Thy word have I hid in my heart. Hide Jesus in your heart. He can help you be an overcomer. He can. Rejoice not against me, O mine enemy. When I fall, I shall arise. When I sit in darkness, the Lord shall be a light unto me. Micah 7. The Lord is my light, my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Anybody sing in choirs and academies as they grew up? There was a song, Connie, you remember that, The Lord is my light. Da, 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 da. Can't sing it nearly as well as you could do it for us. But that was a great song, and it still rings in my ear. The Lord is my light. I say it humbly, proudly, with no shame at all. The Lord is my light. I do not hang my heads at restaurants when I offer prayer between Barbie and I. We are glad to share and know and be let others see that the Lord is my light. If you walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. You're the light of the world. A city that's set on a hill cannot be hid. I alluded to this earlier. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick that it gives light unto all that are in the house. Let your light, I mentioned this before, so shine before men that they may see how good you are. Not that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Let your light shine. You need to have a nice, shiny, polished, not tarnished, not dusty mirror so that you can reflect the light to those around. So how good is your mirror? I don't know why this girl is crying. She's looking in there. Maybe she doesn't like the way she looks that morning or doesn't like her makeup. Whatever it is, she doesn't look real happy. How is your mirror? How do you keep it polished? How do you keep your reflector so others can see that you've been with Jesus? How do you keep that shiny? This is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. This is life eternal, that they might know thee. How do you get to know him? Spend time with him every day. That's how you keep your mirror shiny. Spend time with him every morning and say, Jesus, meet me here in your word. And he will not let you down. He'll meet you there. And it's a two-way conversation. As he meets you there in his word, you read what he's saying through those that he inspired. And then you can say little prayers back, can't you, as you read and study every morning, keeping your mirror shiny and not tarnished? Eternal life to do that. It's not salvation by works. It's trusting him to change you. So how good is your mirror? Spend time with your Jesus every morning and lay up his words in your heart. Madeline Lengel wrote a little book called Walking on Water. We draw people to our Jesus, not by loudly discrediting what they believe, by telling them how wrong they are, how right we are. That's not the way you draw people to Jesus. But instead, we show them a light that is so lovely, they want to know with all their hearts the source of it. That light is Jesus. So here's a little summary of some of the things we've looked at. Certainly, it isn't perfectly parallel, but how God is like light. He is warm and accepting and welcoming. He's beautiful. He's the source of life. Without light, physical light, crops couldn't grow. Plant would die. We wouldn't even be alive today without light. But he is the source of true life. He saves us from the darkness. He promises a bright future. And it's such a mess on this planet, I hope he comes back and cleans it up soon. And all the signs are pointing like it's not going to last much longer. He is changeless. Speed of light is a constant. He's dependable. He's accessible. And light doesn't really relate to this next one I put up that I could figure out how. Maybe Doc here could help me. But he is also very forgiving. I don't know if light is really forgiving. But in any case, he certainly is forgiving. And these other characteristics could be related to light. A quote from Revelation and from Great Controversy. His countenance outshines the dazzling brightness of the noonday sun. Talk about a bright light. It's brighter than the sun. Noonday. And he hath on his vesture and on his thigh a name written, King of Kings, Lord of Lords. And we will get to see him face to face if we keep our mirrors polished, meet with him every day, and get to know him as our friend, hiding his word in our hearts. The throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, Revelation 22, and his servants shall serve him, and they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. Do you want to see Jesus face to face? Do you really want to? Adam and Eve communed with their Creator face to face in the garden, and we lost that. And I don't know if that's saying both the Father and the Son will get to see face to face. I hope so. I hope we'll be able to look and see, that's my daddy. That's the Father. I want to see him face to face. He is our bright King. He is our light. He is our Lord. Do you want his light to shine into your heart? Do you want it to reflect off of you so that others can see it?